Well, first, let's be clear. I was never a brat. Ever. Never. Just get that out of the way. That's taken care of. But I'm very honored to be here today. This place is special. I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a few minutes, but I just want to jump right in. There's nearly 3 billion people in the world under the age of 20. Almost 3 billion under the age of 20. Think about that just for a minute. If you look around the room, you're thinking, wow, there's quite a few in here that might be under the age of 20. Those are the people that I want to talk to you a little bit about. There's going to be a couple other ages in there. But what I want to do today is really give you some information that you may not know. Some research that's been done. I want to give you just some percentages. And when I saw the research, I was shocked, honestly. And that's why I'm here. We're sharing this across the nation with churches as far as California, Alaska, Florida, all over the place. And it's not just a few people. It's everyone at Freed Hardeman that's sharing this information because we think it's that important. 3 billion people under the ages of 20. In some research done by Pew Forum, they looked at just across the globe, how many folks really are represented in religion. 2.2 billion are Christians. But for the first time, it's not the first or the second one that's a surprise. It's the third one. The third largest religious group in the world are non-believers. 1.1 billion. That's a lot of non-believers. And that's something that we need to be aware of and begin to work toward. 51 million of those live in America. So being at a Christian college and being at Freed Hardeman, being in a church, those are the ones that we can really target, I think, more than anyone else. This is the one that really surprised me. Between 2007 and 2012, this is people who are 30 and below, and 83% in 2007, I never doubted the existence of God. 83% said that. In 2012, went down to 68%. So what's taking place? What's happening within our world? One in three Americans believe that they're just not associated with any religion at all. So one out of every three are not associated with any religion. And that trend is growing. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Oh, yeah. 18 to 25-year-olds, 38. This is based on a book by David Kinneman, You Lost Me. 18 to 25-year-olds, 38% have significantly doubted their faith, 57 are less active, and 59 have dropped out of church. That's stunning to me. This is just taking place in the last 10 years, really. And that's what's taking place. 57% are less active in church than at age 15. The young adult years of many Americans are marked really just a decline in religion. They don't want to have anything to do with it. They just are tired of it. They're tired of the structure. And they find that most of that takes place when they leave home, when they leave this church, when they go somewhere else, and they go to college. The college experience is being the number one determining factor of our young people leaving church. Wherever they go to college, whatever happens there, that's what's taking place. And that's when they're leaving the church. So what I wanted to do today was basically tell you in a nutshell, they're leaving religion, they're no longer attending church, and they're beginning to doubt the existence of God. And that's just really a scary thing. So what can we do about it? I'm going to get to that. First, I want to talk about this place. Train up a child in the way he should go, even when he is old, he will not depart from it. I came over here yesterday so I could make sure I had all this technology, you know, my iPad, my phone, my paper, you know, I wanted to make sure that it was all going to work. And I came in and I went back there and it's like I walked into the, you know, space shuttle. So I couldn't figure anything out back there and I couldn't get it turned on. And so I said, well, Dad, that was a great trip. You know, it's fun, nice and warm in here. Let's go back to the house. But the thing that was interesting to me was as we walked out, the pride that he had in the job you had done in this hallway, It was all about young people. It was about, let me tell you what we're doing here. Let me walk you through the rooms. Look at this hallway. Look what she did here. Look who's been, what they've painted here. Look in here. And he wanted to take me in each and every room. I'm thinking, I can't get my PowerPoint to work. But he's thinking, you have to see this. A thing you do well here at Palm Beach Lakes, and I'm preaching to the church, a thing you do well here is work with young people. My first visit here was round about the time Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. It was actually 2 weeks before. I was born at Good Sam. My mom had me here 2 weeks after. And every Sunday, Wednesday, anything that the doors were open, we were here. That was my first visit. It was where I learned to be a Christian. It's where Red Johnson and Everett Hatfield taught me to fish. It wasn't really anything about church, but my father put me around Christian men who are great examples, and they taught me to fish. This is where Don Spurlock taught me to sing Shortening Bread. I mean, I don't know if you remember that or not, and if you can't remember it, we need to find some kind of video, but it was unbelievable. Gigi Friedling, 7th grade. I went to my first junior-senior banquet as a 7th grader with Gigi. Rose Martin taught me really my favorite Bible character, Ehud. Some people say Ehud. It's wrong because it's Ehud because it rhymes with Judd, and he was left-handed. Ehud. That's what it is. It's where I was called down from the pulpit while messing around with Jody Massey over here in the old building. Dan was preaching, and he just stopped and stared at me. And my mom did, like, Roadrunner and just did and pulled me out, you know. But it's where that happened. It's where I got in trouble. It's where I found the best friend of my childhood, Gary Jenkins with a capital D. We were best friends. I spent more time at the Jenkins house probably than I did at my own on Sundays. We were together all the time. This place just created a great atmosphere. It's where my brother Johnny Mark taught me that the unleavened bread was in the refrigerator. And so after church, before we went out to eat, I might have a few. So I'm gonna confess to that. But more importantly, it's where Bill Powell taught me to serve on the Lord's table. We would go back in that library and he would line us up. And I remember the first time I had my suit on, I was so nervous. It's going to be okay, Judd, you know. And he took me through that. So where Jerry Hopkins and Dwayne and Dwight Lanham taught me to lead singing. It's where Joe Holland taught me Christian evidences, as much as I hated that class. But I learned it, and I will never forget it, because he kept teaching us, and we learned a lot of things in there. So where Dan Jenkins taught me that elders must be pops, bishops, elders, presbyters, overseers, pastors, and shepherds. If you don't know that, you will if you sit here longer than a year. And it's always right to do right. It's always wrong to do wrong. It's never right to do wrong, and it's never wrong to do right. And that's right. I learned that here. And you people are the ones that taught me. And it's people like you that taught me that I needed to believe the Word of God, confess it, repent of my sins, be baptized, and live a faithful life. And on March 13, 1983, 30 years and a month ago, that happened. Thank you. I thank you. It's special to me. You provide a great foundation for today's youth, and I think you know that. I think you guys spend a lot of time and a lot of effort focusing on that. But what happens when they leave this place? What happens when they leave here, they graduate from high school, and they have all these aspirations, and their life is new, and you know what's coming, and you're trying to tell them, but what happens? I want to tell you a little bit about who these people are. I want to tell you a little bit about how they think, because it's probably a little different than how you think, unless you're one of them. And if you're one of them, I'm just going to talk about you for a little while, all right? And I'll try to be nice. I actually took a survey to find out how millennial I was. It was online, and so these were some of the questions. There were like 24 questions, and have you watched more than 1 hour TV in the past 24 hours? Have you read a daily newspaper? Yeah. How many text messages did you send or receive? How important is a high-paying job to you? And do you have a tattoo or piercing? Well, if I'm going to make fun of them, I'm 4 points away from being a millennial, so I'm not going to make fun of anyone. I'm pretty close. If I had a tattoo, I'd be over the line. But the thing that was interesting was a tattoo, piercing, or is religion important to you? If religion was important to you, the number went down. If religion was not important to you, the number went up. So that was kind of interesting. But this is who they are. Can I have that yesterday? I want it right now. I want to watch a movie, Netflix. I'm there. It's done. I got it right on my phone. I want everything right this second. Short attention span. And the other one is a short attention span. It's really, really short. You have to stay with them, you have to stay in front of them, and you have to make an impression from the very beginning. Still haven't grown up. After they graduate from college, sometimes they come home. A lot of that has to do with different circumstances, but that's something. They remember what it was like before when they had the one computer in the library, you remember? And they brought it in. They do remember that, and that is archaic. They will all be famous at some point. It'll be before about 10 seconds, but they'll be famous at some point. Technology, socially schizophrenic. They may be one person on Facebook, a different person on LinkedIn. Seriously. Because if you look at someone on Facebook and you go look at them at LinkedIn, they've got their tie. They're like this. Facebook, there's no jumping on trampolines. There's no telling what you're going to see. Also, after they die, they live on. We had a student had a terrible death down in the Dominican on a mission trip. He drowned. And for 3 years after he died, people were posting to his Facebook page. And it was just a place where they could go and talk about and mourn him. So you actually do live on in memory in digital age after you die. They're documenters. They take pictures. They video. They do keep up with everything, and they keep up with it on Facebook. And they're multitaskers. I saw a picture online of a guy skateboarding. He was taking a wall, and he had his phone in his hand. He was texting. But not just texting and skating. They can do a lot of things that are important, that are actually beneficial. So it's important to remember that. They think they're very special, and that's because their parents have told them that since they breathed, before they came out. You're special, you're special, you're special. So everyone is different, everyone is special, and you have to treat them that way. They're sheltered and highly protected. The reason they're special is because their parents have just been over them like this the whole time. They're called helicopter parents. And I didn't really understand it. We had a young lady that came to Freed Hardeman, and she enrolled, and she moved into the dorm, and she was having a great time. She went to Interface, and that's our student orientation program. Went to class, been going to chapel 3 weeks in, and we found out that her mother never left. She was in the dorm room with her. It was her mother, and her roommate. So, you know, I mean, that's a helicopter, I guess, you know. But, you know, you kind of wonder what's going on there and how is that going to affect her. And it was basically her roommate that let us know what was going on. Now, I really didn't understand it. I'm like, that's crazy. And then it happened to me. Then it happened to me, okay. This is my little one. This is Cecily, okay. She is just adorable. I mean, look at her. Isn't she? So, you know, I've kind of turned from this helicopter into this helicopter. Right? She comes home, Daddy, Taylor was mean to me on the playground. How big is he? How big's his daddy? We'll have a conversation. You know, but it's true. I didn't understand it, but now I do. And don't get me wrong. I know that all of us that have been children or have children were precious at one point. My parents took me to college. They dropped me off. They left. Okay. Leanne, my wife, when her parents took her to college, I don't even think her father turned the engine off. Set it out. You good? See you at Christmas, you know. It's different today. So when we're talking about young people and we're trying to have influence over them, it's very important that we look at them as a unit with their parents. It's not just that student, but it's also the parent. They're very confident because they've been hovered over and they've been told you're special, and they believe it. And they're very confident, they're motivated, and they're goal-oriented. If you set a goal out for these folks, they're going to accomplish it, and they're going to keep trying. They have great potential, but we have to find a way to focus that. Yes, they're team-oriented. The group is not really interested in individual achievement. They want to have the work as a group, and they all want to say, hey, this is why I'm doing this. This is why it's important. And it has to have meaning. Also, they're achieving very well. GPAs are rising. Crime is actually falling. They have great values, and they understand how important it is to be really just a citizen. They are pressured, highly structured. They're conventional. They do respect authority and don't question it. However, they do question how things have been done, and is there a better way? So sometimes that gets in a little bit of trouble with authority, but they do respect authority. This is one of the most important slides. They value parents' opinion. They value parents' opinion. I didn't value my parents' opinion until like Thursday, okay? I mean, it was just, you know, you don't really know until you're older. And we used to hear all these speeches. The people would come in like me and they would say, I know you don't believe me, but you need to. The young people today, they believe us and they believe their parents. And they understand that we actually do have something that might be important for them to hear. Parents are the number one influencers among college students. They're the ones that are going to bring them in. They're the ones that are going to talk them into it. We actually have just one. We used to just recruit to students. We now recruit to students and parents. We have a whole marketing campaign just for parents and making sure they understand what's going on. The future is in the hands of our children. How that future will look will be based on you. The bottom line is they enjoy working as long as it has meaning. They believe you should treat others as you want to be treated. They want to be part of something bigger and greater than their individuality, but they're not sure about religion and how things have been done. So you see the potential, but there's something missing, and we have to figure out how to take care of that. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. I believe my dad wanted me to be a preacher, but he never really told me. He wanted me to be a basketball player, a really good basketball player. He came to all my games. He made sure, he came to a lot of games. Considering the time he spent going to games, and my mother was there too, considering the time they spent going to games versus how much I actually played, it was ridiculous. I mean, you know, it's like 5 minutes a season, you know, something like that. But Dad would hire a coach. You need to get better. And there was one game that I remember in my mind where I was actually playing, and for some reason the referees didn't show up, and you know Dad's a referee, so he's refereeing the game. He's got his whistle, and he's going, be aggressive, you know. He's out there on the floor trying to make me be a better basketball player, but he never looked at me and said, be a better basketball player, or be a great basketball player. Same thing with my mother. She wanted me, I think, to be a good singer. Everywhere we went in the car was Ann Murray and Kenny Rogers and Lionel Richie and Juice Newton, Breaking It to Me Gently. She's got all these songs that we're singing. And we're singing them in the car, sing with me, baby. And we're singing and we're singing and we're singing. But she never said, I want you to be a great singer. I want you to go to Nashville, and if you don't, you're not going to get dinner tonight. It was never like that. She was always supportive, and she always put me in an environment where I could learn those things. But she never shoved them down my throat. In the same way, my mother and father never said, we want you to be a Christian. As I said before, June 30th, after I was born on the 17th, I was here. I was in this place, in another building, but I was here. And until I left to go to Fried Hardeman, I was here. And if I wasn't, I had either been hit by something or hit by something. I mean, that was it. Even if I was sick, we were pretty much here. So that's a way to think about this and how we might approach it. What can we do as church members? Well, 1 Thessalonians 5:17 says, pray without ceasing. I've lost my connection. Okay, pray without ceasing. Also, confess your sins one to another and pray for one another that you may be healed. Prayer seems like an easy thing, but we really don't do it enough. I'm guilty of that too. When it comes to praying for our young people, we need to do that more and make sure that they're included in everything we say and in everything that we do. We have to teach. I'm one ahead, sorry. We have to teach. I think that's another thing, as I mentioned before, that you do very well here. Getting that foundation in place. But when they leave here, how are we teaching? Deuteronomy 6:6-9 talks about just making sure that it's always around your neck, that it's bound in your heart. And that's something you need to consider. And Proverbs 6:20-21, my son, keep your father's commandments and forsake not your mother's teaching. Bind them in your heart. Always tie them around your neck. I'm sorry, that was Proverbs 6, not Deuteronomy. And my son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. I know we covered this, but it's very important that we continue to teach. We've got to provide a godly environment. Do not be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. The fortunate thing, as Dan said, I was always at his house, it seemed like. Gary and I were always together. And the reason we were together is because we were here and we were there. The people here were the people that I was around, and that environment saved me. I believe that. That environment actually saved me. And I think when I left here and went to another place, that that environment continued to be a place where I could continue to be saved. It was also true in high school. My mother and father sent me, to Freed Hardeman. They didn't, and then when I went to college, they sent me to Freed Hardeman, and they didn't really give me a choice. I mean, they gave me a choice. Dad said, you can go anywhere. I'm only paying for Freed Hardeman, but you can go anywhere, wherever you want to go. So, that was an easy decision. We need to encourage them. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth. Before the evil days come and the years draw near, I have no pleasure in them. We have to show them that God exists, that He answers prayer, that He knows our every need, and that they should talk to Him. We're not teaching them to talk to God. I need to do a better job of that in my own home. But we need to teach them to talk to God and know that He exists and that He is there to help us. Let no one despise your youth for your youth, but set the believers an example in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and purity. We have to be examples. We have to encourage them and be examples. Now, Christian education. I'm a firm believer in it. I've been a part of it, as Dan said, for 20 years. I went to Freed Hardeman. I've gone to a state school. I'm now actually enrolled in an online school, getting my terminal degree in photography. I'm serious. It's called Savannah College of Art and Design. I can show you. I'm getting an MFA in art in photography. Thanks for laughing. I guess I'll quit that program. Anyway. But seriously, I'm getting a terminal degree in photography. I teach photography at Freed Hardeman in the art department. They have just combined the art department and the science department, of which my wife Leanne is dean. So at some point, I'll probably be working for her, which is very exciting. But that's why I'm getting that terminal degree. At Freed Hardeman, though, for a long time, we've talked about growing in wisdom and in stature and favor with God. The really fourfold growth. That Jesus experienced. And we believe at Freed Hardeman, we have that. And I believe that the Christian schools that we all know about do this. All Scripture is breathed out by God and profitable for teaching, reproof, correction. We know this verse, and it's true. We have to continue to do those things. And I believe at a Christian university, that happens. This is the study that I really wanted to tell you about, is where have all the young people gone? Flavel Yakeley is actually a faculty member at Harding. He's actually a staff member at Harding. He works in one of the church relations offices. And he was commissioned by these guys, the presidents of all these colleges, to do a study on young people. what they're doing. The ones that went to Christian schools, the one that didn't go to Christian schools, he got the names from churches, and he did this study. The retention rate in the church. People that did not attend college, only 43% were still members of the church. Those that did not attend a Christian school, only 49.7%. This was in 2008. Those that attended a Christian school was 85%. 85% were still members of the church. And in the study, you could break out each school. Freed Hardeman was 94.9% of people that went to Freed Hardeman were still members of the church. There's some good information there, but it's a little bit scary. It's real scary. I do, of course, you know, point out the Christian schools in Freed Hardeman, but when you think about it, it's almost half. Half as much. Involvement in church leadership. 65% of Freed Hardeman graduates are involved in leadership, but the other Christian schools is 56%. Secular schools, 21%. And those who didn't go to college, only 7% are involved in church leadership. I'm not talking about just members of the church. I'm talking about the people who preach, who are elders, who are deacons, who serve as leaders of the church, men and women. This is church leadership, not just membership. And it's something that we need to really focus on. Church membership, Freed Hardeman is very high. 85% claim membership in the Churches of Christ. That's the freshman class that just came in. We're about 83, 85%. Marital status of those who were part of a Christian education, divorce rate is roughly, I think it's above 40% now. If you go to a Christian college, it's 5.4%. That's the divorce rate if you attend a Christian college. Here's the summary. Christian college alumni are more likely to stay faithful in church. They're more likely to be active in church leadership, and they're less likely to get divorced. If you go to a Christian college, you're going to have a much better success rate. That's basically what it says in all that you do when it comes to the church and in your marriage. And here's what makes the difference. Christian college students are more active in church activities during their college years. There's positive peer pressure to go to church. When you're in the dorm and you're asleep, there's people saying, hey, get up, we got to go to church. I'm not saying it's that way everywhere, but it's pretty strong. Student devotionals give leadership opportunities, classes, dorms. Everywhere on campus, you can go to a devotional on Freed Hardeman's campus any day. Any day of the week, you can go to a devotional. There's one that you can go to at any point almost. Daily chapel. At Freed Hardeman University, we have chapel every day at 10:30. Every day. Monday through Friday, every day, we have chapel. Not everyone does that. Not all the Christian colleges do that, but we do at Freed Hardeman. The interesting thing about chapel is students do complain about going every now and then, later in the semester when they're trying to get their coursework done. But when they leave, one of the top three things that our alumni miss about Freed Hardeman University is chapel. Because they get out in a job and they want that break. They all want to stop at 10:30 and go to chapel and see their friends and worship God. And it's the number one of the top three things that they miss. Classes are taught by Christian faculty, and every student takes a Bible class every semester. Students are around Christians and date Christians. Extracurricular activities provide social opportunities, and lifetime friendships are formed. This is one, though, that I think is really important. When I graduated from Freed Hardeman, my social network before Facebook, when it was just you had to know people literally face to face, were Christians. I was in Nashville interviewing for jobs with Christians, with people who worked in the secular world but were still members of the church. So not only am I graduating from college a Christian and I've gone through these 4 years and I've become a stronger Christian, I'm now able to know who the other Christians are and I may be able to work with them once I leave there. It's just a great opportunity. Quality Bible study is probably the most concentrated time you'll ever study the Bible. because our Bible classes are tough. They're very, very difficult. Service and evangelism opportunities are just innumerable. We have probably about 300 kids that go on mission trips every spring break. They don't take their spring break. They go on mission trips. And that's very impressive. This is one thing I want to address today. I think when people think about Christian education, they think, well, my education is going to be inferior, and I'm paying more for it. I want to talk about that myth just a little bit. I don't believe it. I'm going to use Fried Hardeman as an example. You could use other of the Christian schools, but I'm most familiar with this one. 81% of our classes have fewer than 30 students. So they're going to get to know their teachers. They're going to get to know those members of the church that are teaching them. 92% of graduates who have applied to a professional or graduate program in the health sciences since 2000 have been accepted. The national average is 40%. Fried Hardeman, it's 92. 100% of our social work graduates are accepted. 70% of full-time faculty hold terminal degrees. And that's basically what I was just talking about with photography a minute ago. If you have a chemistry professor, they have gone as far as they can in school. They have reached the final degree. They have a terminal degree. There's no further they can go. 70% of our faculty hold one of those. 100% of the faculty at Fried Hardeman University are sitting where you're sitting today. They're at church. And they're worshiping the Lord just like you are. 100% of them. That goes not just for the faculty, but also for the staff. If they're walking to class and they see someone on a mower, mowing the yard, it's a member of the church. That's what's special about Fried Hardeman. We also teach a little Bible, just a little. 50 Bible students a year graduate from Fried Hardeman. It's higher than any other Christian college. That's a low number, but it's higher than any other. We have 45 minors in Bible, 153 Bible majors right now, and 1,490 enrolled in Bible classes. 83% of students are members of the church. If you go to Fried Hardeman and you see 10 people, there's going to be 8 of them that are members of the church. There's going to be one that's kind of like on the fence, and there's one that's not. When you look at 10, 8 of them are members of the church, possibly 9. 100% of our Bible faculty have terminal degrees. They have reached their limit as far as getting an education from a place. They're still studying, don't get me wrong, but every one of our Bible faculty members have a terminal degree. This is just a snapshot. Since I know the dean of the School of Science and Math so well, this is one of her classes that she teaches. Now, granted, these are the sciences. These are pretty much the better students that we have, but this is just, I said, give me your list and tell me what's going on. These are her graduates. Accepted into medical school at UT Memphis, PhD in chemistry, PhD in chemical physics. We have pharmacy school, pharmacy school, pharmacy school, and Katie Brown, she has a job offer until she decides where she wants to go to graduate school. We're placing people in the workplace. People are getting jobs, and they're getting jobs either at other Christian institutions getting their degree or going elsewhere. Now, the cost of a Christian education. I know it's daunting. I'm scared to death. If Cecily doesn't decide to go to Fried Hardeman and I get the discount, we're saving right now to pay for it. Right now, the average debt of a student that graduates from Fried Hardeman is about $22,000. When they get through with their 4 years or 5 years, it's $22,000. The average national debt, according to CNN, is $27,000. That's just college in general. That's nationwide. But I understand that it does cost a lot of money. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his own soul? I called my admissions director, and I sent him this. I said, is there anything that I should add? And he said, you could change that verse to, what does it profit a man to go to a state school for a cheaper amount and lose his soul? And he said, isn't that how it reads? And I said, no, I don't think that's how it reads. He was kidding, of course. But I think it's an important note to make. When you consider Christian education and what it can do for your family, for your children, and for the future of the church, it's a pretty persuasive argument. Madison Mayhew, she She's an art student. And the debt rates came out last week, actually, in Tennessee, and they had a story on it. And they wanted to talk to our students because we were in Tennessee, 22,000 isn't the highest, but it was in that area, and they wanted to talk to one. And so the reporters came, sat down with our students and talked to them. And they're like, you know, what's your debt load going to be? She's like, I don't know. And they're like, you don't even know? She said, well, I know I had some scholarships. I know I had some loans. It's probably going to be between $15,000 and $18,000. And they're like, doesn't that concern you? She said, no. And this was her quote that appeared in the paper on the front page of the Jackson Sun. I've grown so much being here spiritually that no matter how much I owe, I wouldn't go back and change schools for a less expensive option. She gets it. And she's been there for 4 years and she understands it. And her parents have made sacrifices. And she's made sacrifices. But she is in everything on campus. She's doing everything she can, and she's going to be one of our excellent graduates. Just a final word. Jerry earlier read Ephesians 6, 10 through 13. Putting on the armor of God and being strong, standing firm, and praying. It's really about church leadership. It's about who our leaders are going to be on down the road. Where is this place going to be? What are we doing to make sure that this church will continue? And I know that we're doing a lot here. I know we're doing a lot in Henderson. And I know that you're doing a great job with your young people. But there's just one thing to consider, and it is where they go from here. 3 billion people under the age of 20. 3 billion. Of those, who will be our elders, deacons, and preachers, our Bible teachers, servants, and missionaries? A Christian education provides a greater chance for those people to be leaders in the church. I know that I've been really strong about Christian education. I believe in it. But beyond that, beyond just a Christian education, there's a lot of concern in the world. There are people turning away from religion. We've got to get them back. We've got to go out and preach the word and teach them. God continually takes ordinary people and allows them to do extraordinary things. If you look at Moses, he was nervous, but he led the people out of Egypt. Consider Philip. There's a man going down a road thinking about his soul. Philip runs into him, and they start talking. They start talking about the Bible. And he wants to know, what's going on here? I want to be this. I want to do this. And he said, look, here's water. What hinders me from being baptized right now? I'm so excited. I am so moved by this. I need to do this right now. And Philip said, if you believe, you can. And they did. That's the same thing that you have right now in this building. You have the same opportunity. These were taught to me a long time ago. It was March 13th, 1982, when I decided, if you're in this audience tonight, today, and it's your turn, and you've been hearing the word, and you finally understand it, come forward and confess those sins. Repent of what you've been doing. Be baptized and live a faithful life as we stand and sing.